Belfast Men's Health Group podcast with Dr. Bree Gentile, known as Dr. G. Bree's probably one of our smartest guests. She's got 2 degrees, one in counselling and one in psychology. So Bree, it's great to have you here, and thanks very much for joining us. Oh, and before you say anything, you're coming in all the way from San Francisco, USA, which is morning time for you, evening time for us. Great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, Bree, and we'll get straight into it. Today, Bree is going to talk about adverse childhood experience, toxic stress, and resilience development. But before we get into those topics, Bree, tell our listeners a wee bit about yourself, a wee bit about your background, maybe a wee bit about your influences, and maybe how you would describe yourself. Now, there's 3 questions in 1, so good luck with that.
I'll try to answer all 3 of them in 1 answer then. So I started off as a psychologist, and I was doing some research and some work with cancer patients and their caregivers. And one of the things that kept coming up was that the cancer patients would want to get a second opinion from a different doctor, mm-hmm. but they were really scared that when they would come back to their original doctor, that they wouldn't get the care that they needed. And I thought that was a really unfortunate thing to be thinking about while you had cancer, that your doctor was going to treat you poorly if you got a second opinion. And so I started to just draw some things out on a napkin and a piece of paper. And I didn't know at the time that I was doing my first wireframe, is what that was called, but I was actually trying to create an app to see if these cancer patients could match with doctors in a different way and maybe potentially even leave their doctor in a different way. And I just started thinking that maybe tech was a bit of an answer or a different tool for me to use all of my psychological skills. And I ended up leaving the psychology world to do more tech. And I ended up creating a chatbot and helping out with a startup and creating a chatbot who was delivering mental health. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up going to Google to work on their hardware, which I hated. So I left. And that's where I ended up at a nonprofit working with trauma. And I was working with communities and families that were really struggling going through trauma, not only their own individual traumas, but also community traumas like violence and discrimination and poverty. So that's where I really got going on trauma. And I started to realize that, you know, even if I'm in tech, trauma still affects us. And it affects the way we think. It affects the way we work. And so I just wanted to have more and more conversations about toxic stress and trauma, whether we had it as a kid or whether we even experienced it as an adult, perhaps in the workforce. But just the effects that it has on your brain and the effects that it has on your body so that we could start seeing people in a little bit of a different way. So I describe myself as a psychologist who grew up to be a UX researcher because I felt like I had a career and a wonderful career, but it just wasn't all that I wanted. And so I made more of it. And so that's how I feel like I kind of grew up into this UX researcher. So I consider myself a UX researcher with a strong psychology background that I'll probably never be able to get rid of.
So, and then, and growing up, taking you back a wee bit then, growing up, who were your mentors or maybe even heroes, if we can say that?
Yeah. So I grew up in Wyoming, which is a pretty small state, nonetheless, in the United States, and it's kind of a frontier state. And I know that you've been there before, so you mm-hmm. understand what I mean, that it's pretty rugged and there's not a lot of buildings and not a lot of people really. And my mom was white in skin color. My dad was black in skin color. Mm-hmm. And at the time, and I was born in 84. So at the time that was still really dicey and definitely taboo and not really celebrated like it is today. Mm-hmm. And so my mom, when she was found out she was pregnant with me, actually was not at home. And so my grandparents didn't really accept me. So my mom had a lot of stress that was, you know, kind of passed on to me in her womb. And finally, when I was born, my maternal grandmother said, if she doesn't have kinky hair, she doesn't need to know that she's black. So I grew up not knowing a lot of my heritage and my roots. I would see my grandparents and I would see my dad and I would see myself. And I was much different colors than the rest of my cousins and my grandparents. But I never got the story. I was told I was Italian. And that was it. So when I grew up, my mentors were, and they still are, but my mom was my mentor because I saw her do something different. I saw her be brave. I saw her be courageous. And I saw her lead by love, not by fear. So when she loved a Black man, she loved a Black man. And that was my father. And then when they separated, she loved another Black man. And then as an adult, she is with a man who's from Tunis. And he's Muslim and we're Catholic. And so I have watched her love beyond limits. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And then also growing up, I wasn't in touch with my native roots until I was a little bit older. And so I didn't have this idea of kind of a mentor that looked like me. But once I got a little bit more in touch with my roots, Geronimo was actually a really big impact for me because what he did was he stood up against the white men who were coming into his tribe. But what was more of a thing was his historical presence was that he never left his native roots. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of times in history when they concede, they'll take on Christianity or they'll say, okay, we'll go to the camp or we'll go to the reservation. But Geronimo didn't do that. And so as an Apache, I really feel like I have to stand my ground in some ways. So he was a big one for me. And then I think finally, my biggest mentor was my grandfather. And he was a diabetic all through the life that I remember him. But in my adult age, he ended up losing both of his legs to diabetes. And he was in his 70s when this happened. Mm. And he said, I'm going to walk again. And I was like, wow, at 70 years old, he ended up learning to walk with two prosthetics. And he walked for a good year and a half before he ended up losing his life to COVID. But watching him not be able to move when he wanted to move and not be able to get up and drive and, you know, get up and kick a soccer ball or just get up and go to the kitchen whenever you want. It was pretty amazing to watch that he still had grace in life. Mm-hmm. He still lived life with humbleness and gratitude, and he made friends with homeless people all over in his wheelchair, just strolling around. And he had to make friends with different people because, you know, people look at you differently. Even in the United States, you still are treated slightly different when you're in a wheelchair. And so I just watched him make new friends at 70 something years old, and I watched him learn new ways of doing things at a later age in life. And I love that. So I consider those three my top mentors for sure.
Brilliant. Great mentors. And I'm going to have to look up Geronimo now. I need to find out more about Geronimo. Brilliant.
Yes, I encourage that.
Okay. So moving on then, I think you touched on it a wee bit there about childhood, adverse childhood experience and toxic stress. Could you expand a wee bit on that, Bree? Just tell us a wee bit more about adverse childhood experience.
Yeah, sure, of course. So in the 80s, they did a study. Kaiser Permanente is a big group here in the United States, and they did a study that looked at adverse childhood experiences, which were basically anything that would break trust for the child. And they came up with 10 of them. So they've got physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse. We've got physical neglect, emotional neglect, mental illness, incarcerated relative, mother treated violently. Let's see, substance abuse. And I think I'm missing one of them. Mm-hmm. What's after substance abuse? Divorce. There we go.
Yeah.
So they came up with the 10 of them, and what they actually ended up finding was that they're much more common than we thought. Mm-hmm. So 1 in 4 Americans that went through the study had at least one ACE, which means that at least a quarter of the United States has at least one of these things that I just listed. Mm-hmm. Then what they also found is that when you have 4 or more of these, it actually starts to affect your body. So if you're not getting support, active support as a child, which is really hard to do unless you have your adults that are, you know, advocating for you and getting support for you. If you've got 4 of those things that I listed and they're not left untreated as an adult, you could have things like heart issues, heart attacks. You've got diabetes, obesity, lots of stress and different disorders with the hormones and things like that. So we know that adverse childhood experiences or ACEs are really hard on the body and on the mind if they're left untreated. But what came from that also was this idea of toxic stress, which is something that more adults experience than not. And that idea was that toxic stress, although it's not ACEs and it doesn't occur in childhood, toxic stress could be some of those things that are happening, but they're happening to you as an adult. So, for example, if you've got substance abuse as an adult, then you're going through toxic stress. And you're also, if you have children, you're putting your child through an ACE. So we like to talk about ACEs and toxic stress in an intergenerational way. That's not just this vacuum way in the sense of like just the child has it. Because a lot of times when you look at the family, you'll see a child that has ACEs, and you look at the parents or the caregivers and you'll realize they also had ACEs. And they're just trying to parent through their ACEs that they never really looked at or never really got support for. So it's a bit of a generational thing that we're seeing.
Now, I have done the ACEs sort of test, if you want, or questionnaire.
Yep.
And I scored high.
I'm a four. How was yours? Was your highest in four?
I can't remember, but it was up in there. Yeah, it was the highest. It was the highest at our table, and I thought, goodness, I'm. Yeah, but here I'm. And I suppose that leads on to my next question there about how can we build resilience. Or resilience development.
That's a really good question.
I mean, I've heard resilience, but resilience development, right?
So I like to think of resilience as a workout, and it's really about working our coping strategies and making sure that they're still working and that they're still sharpened and that they're ready. Because what happens with a lot of this research is they try to talk about avoiding things or preventing things. And the truth of the matter, in my opinion, is that as life goes on, you're going to experience turmoil. Hopefully it's not within, your relationships or within your work, but it might be. If it's not, it's within your community, right? Like, we've got poverty, we've got gun violence, we've got voting, we've got taxes, politics. That's all stress. And so our coping mechanisms need to be refined. And some of them need to be tossed out and replaced. And so with resilience, I always talk about these things called the domains of wellness. And I read your book, Paul, and you had a couple of them in there. You talked about them. So you talked about nutrition. Mm-hmm. You talked about having a purpose, and volunteering and supportive relationships. Mm-hmm. You talked about getting outside in nature. So those are three of the seven right there. You also talked about taking the ACE score. That's taking care of your mental health. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't see a therapist or anything, but I read in your story that you did have some coaching sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's four of the domains right there with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got meditation or mindfulness. So that can be anything from an actual meditation practice to just sitting and breathing for 5 seconds. Mindful moments are also good. And then you also talked about exercise,
mm-hmm.
which is also really good. And then also you talked about what I love is talking about getting mental health. And I think you and I have talked about this, but mental health doesn't have to be in the same sense as like a coach or a therapist. I recently wrote an article about mental health being found in the barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a gentleman who's teaching barbers how to have these conversations when our clients sit in the chair and they say, man, I am having a hard day, a really rough time. I lost my uncle. My job is on the line and my wife just left me. You know, like the barber is hearing this stuff and to be able to say, man, that is rough. You're right. That's some hard times you're going through. But I know you're going to make it through because I've seen you in this chair a couple times. And I know you've been through a couple of job changes. And I know that divorce is hard, but you know what? There's something on the other side, right? So they're able to have this conversation there instead of just being like, oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry. They're trained to have conversations so that we can find mental health support outside of the therapist room or the coach's room, but we can find it in places that we're comfortable going. And so I think it's wonderful when I hear you talk about wanting to be a barber, because that is a place where you could be a supportive relationship for somebody going through a hard time.
Mm-hmm. And that's where I found you on the internet.
That's
and
that's
right. I got your article, which was great. So Brie, what advice then? And I mean, this, you've given us all this advice and sort of this question's a wee bit, you've already answered most of it, but what advice would you give the boys and men about being the best that they can be?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
I think one of the things we have to do is you almost have to forget what society has taught you. Mm. I think for men especially, there's this thing about masculine toxicity, mm-hmm. where you're taught to be tough.
Yep.
You're taught to not cry. You're taught strength and honor, right? And that is by all means necessary. You keep those things steady. You'll be a good man. And that is actually not true, because if you keep those things up, you actually disrespect people. You don't listen to people. You become hardened and you don't have soft empathy for people anymore. So I think that for men, especially, I'd say, don't listen to what history or society has been telling you up until this point. And some of it's been wrong. And yeah. Some of it is just going to be unconditioning and reconditioning that story that, oh, you're a man, you can't cry. Or, oh, yeah, this stuff happened to you as a child. Well, it's water under the bridge. Pick yourself up by your bootstraps and move on.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can revisit your history. You can revisit your history, and you can revisit your history in comparison with your brother or your cousin or your other mates and realize, huh, that wasn't actually normal. Mm-hmm. Or actually that was a painful situation that not everybody did go through. So maybe I can look at that again. It's okay to go back in history, and it's okay to look at things, even if your dad's long and gone,
mm-hmm.
or your grandpa is, you know, dead and gone. You can still say, he didn't really teach me that lesson the right way. Or he didn't really teach me that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, he taught me this in a really bad way. And it's okay to go back in history. I think the other thing is that supportive relationships for men is really, really important, especially friendships that are of the other sex. So if you can surround yourself with all your mates are men, it might be wise of you to have a couple of women friends,
mm-hmm.
because it's just different, right? It's just mm-hmm. different. They speak differently. They smell differently. They go about life differently. So it's one thing to have a supportive group of men, and that's awesome. But really, if you can, and if it's obviously, if it's okay culturally and in your relationships and things like that, to have a couple of friends that are women. And then the other thing I think is that men are not always celebrated to take care of their health unless it's in a way of like getting strong and buff. And I think that women get a lot more media and a lot more, you know, encouragement to get healthy from the inside out. It doesn't matter what you look like. And men don't really get that message. And the truth is that it doesn't really matter what you look like either, because you have to be healthy from the inside out just as much as women do. And so I think for men and boys to focus on their health in a way that's different from sports or just kind of being active, but to actually be like, okay, I'm going to feed my body for energy. I'm going to not drink as many pints as I thought I was going, you know, as I had planned. I'm going to drink more water. You know, I'm going to start my day off with a glass of water instead of before I drink my tea. Mm-hmm. Something like that, just small things where you start to really think about your body as a vehicle. And women are taught this a lot because, you know, we bear children. And so we're kind of always taught as girls, you know, that our body is a vehicle for the human life. Mm-hmm. And then once we have our kid, it's, you know, our body is a vehicle for the rest of our longevity. But men don't really get that conversation, I don't think. And so I want to encourage them to really do focus on your health. And I encourage them to have friends, especially ones of women, and then to go back in history and to rethink about some of the things and stories you've been told.
Very good. I think that thankfully the Belfast Men's Health Group, on our group, we have, in fact, there's probably more women than men. So
nice.
So there's plenty of women on our group, which is great. And I guess I'm in health improvement, and I've been surrounded with women for the last 28 years. So I'm lucky there as well. So yeah, that's excellent points, Bree. Brilliant.
Thank you.
No, they are. We've never heard them, Bran, have we? We've never heard those points. Absolutely, top drawer. And I heard you saying pints. Surely that's, you're not getting pints in America, do you? Yeah, that's just for us. Fair play. Very good. Okay, and then Bree. So how do you look after your own mental health and your physical health? What do you do? What's your sort of regime, or do you have one?
Yeah, it's a great, great thing. So my regime is actually to be quite inconsistent, because what I find is when I start to get consistent on something, I get bored and then I'll do something different. So I like to do challenges, mini challenges when it comes to physical health.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do a 7-day yoga challenge, for example, where I'll do 7 days of yoga and I'll really practice that for 7 days. And then maybe I'll do a 7-day walking challenge where I'll focus on walking outside for 7 days. So those things really help me physical, because I get tired of doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I do love is I do love running marathons for whatever reason. I don't know why that distance means something to me, but I do love to train for marathons. So I'll do that once a year, only once a year.
Okay.
Physical health, though, or mental health, excuse me, I have a therapist, an ongoing therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I also am very religious. And so I pray frequently, which is meditative for me.
Mm-hmm.
As Catholic, I have the rosary. And so the beads are meditative. And I can get really lost in a full rosary for a good amount of time. So that is one thing. The other thing for me, though, is supportive relationships. Not only am I an extrovert, and so I do get energized by being around people, but if I notice that I'm feeling stuck, or I'm not feeling so great about myself, or I'm feeling insecure, I find that when I go out with people, or go have a lunch, or go even just go into the office with my coworkers, I feel loads better. I feel like I've, somehow I'm not all alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm not the only person in the world who, you know, thinks that she's fat today, or had a bad hair day, or feels like, you know, financially she's never going to make it. So there's other people out there that feel the same way, and it passes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that helps for me. The other thing that has really helped, Paul, is having conversations like this. To be able to talk about my experiences and to talk about the importance of trauma and stress on our bodies, to do it globally has been a blessing. And this is why I wake up in the morning, to have conversations way across the pond at all hours of the day. So this is life-giving.
Well, here now you've triggered my interest there on a number of things, but one of them is the marathon, because I am running Dublin Marathon this coming Sunday. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So that will be, I do marathons myself now. So yes, but they're.
Well, good luck.
Yep.
Good
so luck. That's in the pipeline. So I need to get, this is tapering for the last couple of weeks now, Bree. So I'm hopefully ready to go. So
yes, yep. Absolutely. You're ready.
And I'll tell you, whenever you're ready, you must give me a shout, and we must team up at some point to do a marathon. There you go.
I would love that. And you know what? I'll even come to Dublin, because I would love to run an international marathon. So I will put that on my list.
You get that on your list. And this is Dublin's first marathon now post-COVID. So that was, I think that was, that my application was in there for about 4 years, just waiting. So, but yes, I'll keep you posted. And it is, it's the end of October every year.
End of October. I love it. What's the weather like at the end of October?
Well, the weather is going to be about 12 or 14 degrees.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's not bad. It could rain. It might not rain. I think the weather's actually okay for Dublin on Sunday.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So it's not bad.
I like it.
Now, what's the temperature like in San Francisco today?
Let's see. Today, I think I'm going to just look it up, but I don't give you false news.
That's all right. just look out the window.
It looks like today, 56. It's a little bit cloudy. And, you know, San Francisco has microclimates. And so you can be in one area and be sucked in on the fog. And then you can drive about, you know, 2 or 3 miles down the hill and you've got sun all the time. So, yeah.
56. What's 56, Brandon? Fahrenheit, Brandon? Or
50?
Yeah, 56 Fahrenheit. Yep. Yeah.
What's that in Celsius? About
what?
Celsius?
Let's see if I can take it over.
10 degrees, maybe? Well,
does that sound right?
I can't remember.
I think San Francisco, I've been checking, and I think it's pretty seemly.
Freezing.
Yeah. 32, 57, yeah.
It's about 12, 30.
30, yeah. That's pretty samey. Yeah, it's not bad. It's not so much the temperature, Brie, it's the wind. So if there's no wind, you're quids in. Okay.
That's right.
You know, I've digressed there slightly. Sorry about that. Sorry. Okay. We've got that question. Okay, this is now, we're in the sort of the last couple of questions in a more lighthearted way. We'll come to the dream job. I'll give you that one. We're going to come to a dream job. But before that, and I think you've already answered some of this in your previous question, what makes you happy?
It's really people that make me happy. Mm-hmm. And I love that I've grown up and I still, as an adult, walk by faith and not by sight. And that makes me really happy because it takes a lot in this day and age to still have faith in something larger than you, to still have faith that even though logically you can't understand what's going on, you still know that there's something that's going to work out. And I think that piece has made me a very happy person. Mm-hmm. That's made me very happy.
Cool.
And soccer. We call soccer football over there.
Yeah, we call it football.
Is a very big thing in my life. Yeah.
Wow, cool. I mean, this is, we love football here. It's nearly our national sport. Yeah. And the World Cup's happening. I don't know if is America in the World Cup?
Yes.
Oh, you're in. Oh, there you go.
Yes, we're in Group B. We're in there with England. England's in our group.
Oh, that's right. Yes. So I'll be supporting the USA.
China.
Yeah. we'll be supporting the USA, Brent.
Exactly.
Good.
Anybody but England? Oh, sorry. I shouldn't have said that. No, you're not allowed to say that. No.
Yeah. And you know, Wales is in there too. So please. Here for the USA for sure.
Yeah. Oh, we're definitely in for USA. Yeah, all the way. Okay, Brie. And here, the last question. And you might well be doing it in a more sort of, what's your dream job?
I would love to be a professional football player. I would love to play soccer professionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm doing my dream job, but wow. Yep. If I had the skills of the feet skills and just to hear the crowd, to walk up on the pitch and to see your colors. And I would love to be a professional. I'd love that.
Class. That would be. Did you ever play any football or soccer?
I played a little bit, but never on a team, never at even a state level. So I try to follow the Premier League. It's very difficult for me to follow over here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I settle for the Major League Soccer, which is not fantastic, but I just watch them and I'm like, wow, it's just amazing to watch them work the ball. And I just love it. I love it.
Cool.
Could you just tell her Joe Montana was one of my heroes.
There you go. Joe Montana was one of Brian's heroes. Does that guy ring a bell?
Played for the 49ers.
Joe Montana.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's American football now, Brian, isn't it? Yeah.
Very popular still.
Here, it's growing. The American football has grown over this end. End of the world. Yep.
Oh.
Bree.
Here's
their final question. How can people find you if they're interested in contacting you or reaching out, or how can we get in touch with you?
Yeah. Well, the best way is probably to either just email me, which is Bree, B-R-E, at Dr. G's Lab, and that's drgslab.com. You can find me on LinkedIn as Dr. G, so really easy. And then I have a website, too, which is drgslab.com. And you can always just fill in the form there and reach out that way, too.
Perfect. And you know what? I didn't even get on to talk about Dr. G's Lab or anything else. That, you know what that is? That's for another day. That's for another podcast.
I love it. I'm coming back.
There you go. Perfect. Bree, thank you very much. All the way from San Francisco, folks. Bree Gentile, absolutely brilliant. Dr. G, thank you.
Thank you.